interviewing Orrin Daggett of Portage, Maine, and he's going to tell us about his experience in the woods and about the Lombard log hauler. And before you start, can I ask you what your age is?
76.
Okay. Now, go ahead. We want to know when you worked in the woods and where.
The last time that I was on one of these was in around 1941, I think. I don't think there would have been any used since then.
Is that right? Yeah.
And I had, the Portage Lake Mill Company had six of them to Fish Lake. And when they went out of business, they sold them all for junk. We cut them up with the acetylene torch and the pieces big enough we'd haul them out. But when they used them now, they had six up there. And when they started to haul, in the winter, the steam never went off them, only just to roll the tubes. They run night and day. As fast as one crew come in, the other crew was all ready to step right on it and go.
So you had a crew running 24 hours?
24 hours a day. And a lot of times, one crew done that, because if they had any hard luck or anything, we never planned on leaving the load in the woods. We done our repairing right on the road.
Now, these were steam log haulers.
These were steam log haulers.
Did you ever work on the ones before the steam log haulers?
Well, these were both steam and wood.
Yes.
We fired them with wood when we was up in the woods, and then when we was hauling into the mill here, but they fired them with coal.
Oh, yeah.
And there was another Lombard tractor was built by the same Lombard people, but that run by gas. It was only a 10-ton machine. And this one here, when it was loaded with water and coal and everything, weighed about 30 tons.
Yeah.
And they were practically like a steam locomotive on the railroad. And we used to haul anywhere from 10, 12 set of sleds to 20, 22. And, it looked just like a train on the track.
Yeah.
I mean, your sleds there. And those sleds were loaded. We used to haul anywhere from 40 to 50, 60 logs on a set of sleds.
On one sled.
They brought one log in from Big Brook there. They had well over 100,000 feet of lumber, and that's a pretty good operation.
Yeah, I guess it is. And you had to make your own roads?
They all made their own roads with that. They had a plow that they used on them all the time. And they also hauled a water tank behind them all the time to ice the roads with, and also the water holes along the road were not close enough together. We ran out of water for the machines, see? And they could always fill out of the water tank that they had.
Oh yeah, right.
To hold their steam.
And how many men did it take to run one of these things?
Well, they had an engineer and a fireman, the steerman, and the conductor.
Now which were you?
I was the steerman most of the time. I put in about 5 or 6 winters on all that.
And now how fast did that thing go?
Well, that depended on the load that you had, and going empty there, they'd go about 10, 12 miles an hour probably. But when they were loaded, of course, they didn't go that fast. And then another thing, they couldn't haul over too much of a hill. They built the roads practically always right along the brook where it was, you know, more or less level.
Yeah.
Because if you tip them up too high on a steep hill, the water would run back, and what we call the soft plug was more or less of a safety valve. If that got uncovered, the heat was so great that lead plug would burn out and blow the wire out back in the firebox and put your water out. Your fire out, and that eliminated blowing up.
Yeah, I see.
And but they were right on the same principle as a steam locomotive on the railroad.
Now, how did they get the logs on the sleds? And
at that time, they didn't have the cranes and everything they have now to load logs with and all that stuff. Everything was done by hand with men with can dogs. And they did have, so they after a while there, they rigged up a derrick with the horses so they could, oh, they could take one or two logs at a time and put them on there. But most of it was done by hand.
If you went in, what time did you go to work? Like, I mean, you stayed right in the woods all the time.
Well, no, what it depended on if I was using one up there. When we hauled into the mill, I'd stay home whenever.
Yeah. And then you'd go early in the morning?
Go early in the morning.
And
it didn't make too much difference. Whenever one machine came in, the new crew went right back.
I see. So if you went early in the morning, then what time did you get out of there with your load?
Well, from here, when we hauled from Car Pond into here, if we had no bad luck, we could make it in about 10 hours.
The whole operation?
Go in. See, the loads were all made up. I kept one machine in the woods to build up a train for you on the siding.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you went in, you just dropped the empty sleds and tried to unhook it onto the other load and brought it out. But if you had a wreck or anything, broke a reach pole or anything on a set of sleds and you went out of the road and everything, well, it might take you hours to get that straightened up and brought back. But we always plan to bring our load in.
Yeah. Who did you work for then?
Well, I worked for the Portage Lake Mail Company, the first of it, and then after they went out of business, John Cormier over here bought that outfit out, and I worked for him until he went out of business. Yeah. I worked on him every winter. And they'd start in about, well, just as soon as there was snow enough to make a road. And they kept that road iced all the time. This solid junk of ice.
Now they've got here, once it was loaded, how did they get it started?
Well, it's just the same
just as like
starting a steam engine,
on the
railroad. Yeah. You just opened your throttle and
let it go.
And she went. And another feature about them, of course, there was no brakes on them.
Holy mackerel.
And you take... I didn't worry too much coming downhill. I could pretty near keep it in the road all right, no matter how fast. Of course, when you get 20 set of sleds behind you shoving that downhill, she goes pretty fast. Well, the engineer has to watch that, and regulate his speed to keep it from jackknifing and everything. But I never worried too much about that. But it was just, anything happened when we were going up a steep hill. If the driving chain broke or anything, she just let the car in neutral gear. There was nothing to hold it. Well, the fireman and the engineer, see where they sit there, they have a chance to jump out, one on either side. But you take stairman in front here, she's got no place to jump.
Yeah.
He has got to ride her out.
Well, so that was kind of a dangerous job then.
Well, it was supposed to be.
How come you never worried when you were going downhill?
Well,
that was
downhill, you could steer a lot better going downhill than you're good going backwards. That's not to go backwards on a hill. Well, all you had just a little window on each side of you there, and you couldn't see nothing but just one leg. And you had to try to keep that leg inside of the road.
Were these roads like ski trails, like ruts from the skis on the sleds?
Well,
or were they just smooth? Like?
No, the road was smooth. They didn't rut the roads in here at that time. The road was practically smooth. You take it in nighttime there and everything, well, you look at that thing for about 10, 12 hours, I study there looking at that headlight there and the snow, when there was no track, new snow. It'd get pretty monotonous.
Imagine.
And after you'd been about 24 hours on that thing, you'd begin to get pretty sleepy. A great many times I had to keep the door open in the cab in front and keep putting some snow on my face to keep me awake.
To stay awake.
Because if you went out of the road with a big train like that behind you,
yeah,
you would be in for a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I can see where you would be. Did that happen very often?
Well, it has happened a good many times.
Yeah.
But while I was on there, it never happened to be anybody get hurt or anything out of that.
Now, how much fuel did it take for, like, to bring one?
Oh, well, I don't know just exactly what the tonnage of coal would be, but we never had coal enough to take us into the woods and back. We kept some right about 3-4 miles from here, stored up ahead some coal bags, and we'd have a load of wood in the tender to fire with it till we got out to here. And if we were running out of wood, well, we got that coal to use to get back into the mill here and get back again to fire wood. Because they used to cut the wood for them in the summer or in the springtime, and they'd have 1,000 cords or so of it in the wood, back in the woods there, and that was all season. And that's what was used for fuel there then. And as they went, you'd see a stream of sparks go in the air 10, 15 feet high from them.
Now, when the ones that burn woods, you had to get rid of the ashes from those. What did
that,
you dump in any special place?
Well, they just right in the road.
Yeah.
Because mostly the ashes was down to such a point that there wasn't much anywhere.
Yeah.
And when they did clean the great stat, went right in the road. Well, the next time he went over with the machine, we had a little scraper just ahead of the lag, something like a road machine scraper. And, of course, that scraped that right out, all out again. And what little that wouldn't make any difference for the road anyway.
Can you remember any good stories about the days when you...
Well, I can remember some of them, but I don't know if they'd be of interest to...
Oh, I think they would, weren't you?
I know in one particular time when we was hauling from Car Pond, we was hauling off from the mountain. Well, we could only take about 3 sets of empty sleds and haul up the mountain because it was too steep. And everything. I remember one particular morning, we went up there and we got almost the top of the mountain, and there was a big drop off it. Right along the side of a ledge there, and you drop down about 25-30 feet right straight down, but the road was made right along the side of that. We got almost to the top, and the driving chain broke. And it started backwards. Well, the engineer and the fireman, they both jumped. And I didn't. I stayed in the gap. Tried to keep it in the road if I could. But it went right back over the 2-3 sleds there, and they jacked nice, and one of the poles came up and took the cab right off over my head. And the engineer and fireman were standing side the road when I run back by, and they were both French folks. I remember Hilaire Corot was engineer there. And he hollered, debarque, which means jump or get off. And I went by them, and that driving chain all unraveled right off in the road there, and I stayed with it till I got by the drop off, and then I swung it and dug into the woods, and I could stop.
So you stuck right with it?
I stuck right with it. Because I had had a little trouble with the boss and the woods there, and I burnt my arm pretty bad. I was cleaning the tubes, and the fireman forgot, and he turned the blower on. And boy, that steam from out there got me in the arm. She'd burnt a hole in the big hand. And I had to lay up after a while. I couldn't I just couldn't stand anymore. And this boss claimed that I was all right, but I was afraid to stay on the mountain.
Oh, yeah, is that right? So that's why, one of the reasons you stuck it out.
So I stuck it out, and when I got through there, when I got to the foot of the hill and got myself up, the engineer was so excited, he never closed the throttle when he jumped. And that was running wide open there, and it was just like it would shake the machine right off the frame. And I, as soon as it stopped, I jumped out and run over in, closed the throttle, and then I grabbed the whistle rope and gave him a good hoop.
I don't know, you were on it. You were the only one on it at the time.
Yeah, at the time. And I told the old boss then, I said, he told me, he said, I should have jumped out and left it. And I said, if I'd have jumped out and left it, I said, that'd have rolled down the mountain and ruined it. Well, it didn't make no difference. It didn't make, well, I told him, I said, I told you before that when I left it, there wouldn't go be nobody else on it.
Yes. Did you have any other experiences like that?
Or? Well, not too much. We drowned one or two of them, had them broke through the ice for us, and, but nobody got harmed or anything, and they eventually got them out, but it was quite a proposition.
How come now you're going across, you mean you went across the lake?
We went out on the lake while the ice was too thin. I mean, it wasn't strong enough to hold us. They used to sometimes have a road made along the shore on the ice, but they keep building that up with the water. They had the water tank, so the ice would build up, but you couldn't put them out onto the lake. They sunk one up here to the north of the river. I wasn't on that particular one, but they sunk one up there.
Nobody ever got drowned on them?
No.
They always had a chance to get out.
But I stayed on it for a number of different men. This old Julius Larson, the old Swedish fellow that he worked for the Portage Company, he was the first engineer that they ever had on them, yeah, and he taught the other fellows who were aspiring for him why he learned them to drive.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a number of fellows here in Portage that drove. There was Luger Boutot and Mac Boutot and Hilaire Carl. But this old Julius Larson was the first fellow that ran with him up here. And he taught all the rest of them.
Now before they had those, they used to haul those logs out with horses.
Out with horses, everything. You know.
So this must have been quite an improvement.
Oh, it was. The logs they could handle with that. And they, when they lumbered above Fish Lake, before they had the truck road in there, all the trucks and everything, they used to haul from way back, putting at the head of the Allagash with them, haul logs into Fish Lake. They'd land them on the ice and then drive them down the river in the spring.
Yeah.
And they used to bring them in with these big steamers and leave their loads spotted along the siding, and they had a smaller machine that could take one set at a time or two sets at a time, all about on the ice, on the road. I was driving one of the gasoline machines there, along the bar, hauling out on the ice. And right to the mouth of the Fox Brook out there, she broke through. I think it was 22 feet of water where it went down. And I kicked the cab door open and jumped out. But when I did, I was right even with the ice. And water was coming up, and I ran out on the ice a ways. When I turned around, look, the exhaust stack was just going under.
My gosh, that was a close call.
Yeah.
Now, I read where they put hay in the roads when you're going downhill in those days so that it would slow you down a little bit.
Yeah,
did they do that?
That was the principle, the idea of it. Instead of putting gravel on the hills, why they didn't have no place to get the gravel in the winter like that, you know, there's snow. So they take fast hay and have it strung along the steepest hills there, and to have a man there to spread that on the hill, and that would check the load, so it couldn't.
And he went right along ahead of you?
Well, he'd be right on the hill, wherever the hill was. He'd be right along there, and before the machine got there, he'd have that tall spread
there. So it would be dry.
So it would check the load.
Now, did it attract any deer, or did you ever come upon those deer?
Oh, yes, we used to see all kinds of deer in the road. We've had to stop and let them out of the road.
Well, now, what if you were going down a hill and you... Did you ever hit any?
We didn't. We never happened to at that time. Mostly, we'd see them along the road where they had been lumbering there and where they'd been feeding the horses and things like that. And there'd be some hay and oats and stuff to it along with. That's where we'd see most of them.
I see.
But I'd seen them on that big brook road there where we'd have to stop that time to let them out of the road. There'd be 8-10 of them just like a flock of sheep there. Yeah. And the snowbanks would be so high. Be hard for them to get out over.
Yeah, in a hurry.
And then we'd have to stop. And they don't have that trouble anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Now, in the earlier part of the tape, you said something about tearing the log haulers apart when you were through them. Would you tell me why they did that?
Well, they could get them. They didn't have any use for them, and they cut them up for junk and sold them to Japan to shoot back at us.
Oh, that's true.
I think they paid for junk there. I helped haul that stuff out of there, and I think Tommy got $20 a ton for the junk.
Is that right?
And they cut them right up with acetylene torches and pieces big enough that we could handle to put onto a sled.
Yeah. Now, I've seen a picture of a log hauler with two steermen on it. What would you need?
Well, you know, that's a pretty big sled. A lot of times when you're on the new road, breaking into a new road or something, it's almost impossible for one man to turn that.
Yeah.
And so they...
Did you ever work on one with two?
No, I never happened to. Of course, the Party Light Metal Company and Carmia were not the only ones. They used them, that same machine, that machine down on Patton and places like that. And LaCroix, when he lumbered up there on the border, they used the same type of machine. But there's a few of them left. But they just did save them, I guess, for antiques or something like that. The last one they had to here, we brought that down from Fish Lake and loaded down to a boxcar, or a flat car, and they hauled it down. I think Mulherin bought that. So they had a museum or something down toward Holton there. And, they had another one here, the Blue Birch in Caribou there. He bought that from John Cormier. And we rigged that up and put it under her own power, and we took it. They took it to Caribou and had it there to the carnival.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the, that was the last one there was up in this country here. I steered that one a good many miles.
How much pay did you get in the 40s?
Well, that's a good question. If you was a real good man, you got $3 a day.
And food?
No.
They have cook camps?
Well, they had cook camps. Yeah. Well, when you was in the woods, you had to get your own food there.
But you got $3.
When you was home, when they was hauling in here, if you stayed the night, you get your breakfast home or whatever, your supper when you get in.
And did you have to work your way up to be a steerman? I mean, did you start doing something?
I started right from scratch. Boys, I can well remember the first trip I went out of here at night. It was snowing to beat the van, and cold. And before I got into Car Pond, the sweat was just pouring right off me.
Yeah.
And it was about 30 below zero. Well, of course, eventually, after I got used to it, I wasn't, but...
You mean you started right out as steerman?
Yeah.
And you'd never done it before, or had learned anything about it?
I'd never done it before, no.
Wow, that's...
Of course, I had driven different kinds of tractors, but not in the size of that. It's altogether different because you had no controller. I mean, your engineer had held the power on. You were just in the front. You couldn't
steer.
You couldn't regulate the speed to suit yourself. Of course, we did have a pilot bell in there, while athletic on the ship there. That anything ahead in the road there that the engineer couldn't see or anything on the turn, any emergency, why I could always call
the bell
rope there and ring that bell, and he knew what it meant.
What if you were going down one of those hills though, and there was an emergency, and it wouldn't do any good to ring the bell?
Well, you'd ring the bell to alert the engineer that there was something wrong, and.
But they
and
couldn't
you just
stop
had
it.
Take it from there and do whatever you could do.
You'd ring the bell and they'd jump off and you'd keep going.
Well, if it got to the point where they had to,
yeah.
Of course they didn't always know either. In the case where they had to leave it, they would. But you didn't get too much of that. I mean, there was not too many times anything like that happened.
You must know some more good stories you can tell. Your wife can think of some, if you can.
I can't think of too many. I mean, it was...
Tell me about the time you did something to your jaw.
Well, I was driving one of the gas machines then. And the fellow was driving against me. I'd been out all night, and he took the machine in the morning. He had trouble with it. And they come and woke me up to come out and see what was the trouble. Well, I went out there and I took hold of the crank and cranked it. And the minute I did, it backfired and the crank flew around and caught me right under the jaw. And throwed me down the road there quite a ways. And I hung around there all day. There was no way to get out. So the little tractor that was towing, they come there, and when they was coming, instead of staying all night, well, they just put some blankets and stuff onto a dray and took me and brought me out. And well, Dr. Haggerty out here, and he came in and set my jaw. My chin was way around, so under my ear.
Oh my gosh, did they have to wire your jaw?
No, it didn't break it. It just knocked
it off. Dislocated
it.
Two men and myself to hold him to put that.
Oh, thing. I can imagine. You didn't faint or anything, huh?
Oh, no.
Couldn't talk.
Well, that must have hurt someone when you did that.
Right.
And I thought that he just put that back and that was it?
That was it. That's all he ever did to it.
Did they give you a little shot of whiskey or anything before they did it?
No, he didn't. He tried pretty bad, but.
Yes, it must have.
But the minute he snapped it back, it came back. Well, that relieved the pain. But it wasn't too serious. Kept me from talking for a while.
How many hours was all that? Did that take after you hurt your jaw before they got you out here to the doctor?
Well, it was about 9 o'clock in the morning when I'd done that, and it was about 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Now did they cut wood in the winter time then, or was this cut before and piled up in
the winter? It was always cut in the spring and piled all up there and so for season.
Yeah.
They couldn't burn green wood. And they had to have
and this was just for burning mostly, this logs, huh? That was all.
Yeah, that's all. They just used them to fire wood.
So when you went up and got the logs, there was no camp or anything there.
Well, there'd usually be a camp. We'd go by the camp, of course.
But there was nobody in it at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there would be?
They had the woods crew all the time. Because they cut logs for near all winter.
Now, the ones that they cut in the winter, when did you... Could you use them right then? Or did they have to season?
No, that was the lumber there. That did not season. Just like logs, like they bulk, like they haul now. But that wood that we had seasoned was just to fire the log on.
Yeah.
keep steam.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
And then the logs that you hauled out to the Portage Mill.
Yeah.
Now, where did they go from there?
Well, they were all sawed into lumber here and shipped to different markets. Just the same as Pinkham and Dunfermline. They, Pinkham's outfit and Moore and them, they operate in the winter cutting the logs back there on the same principle we did, only more than they have machines to handle the staff. And at that time, of course, there was no chainsaws at that time either, anything
right.
like that.
How long were these logs? I mean, how big were
they?
They
cut them just to the full length. They cut them up to the water. They usually, at that time when they cut long, but they didn't plan on cutting anything smaller than 14-inch stump on the, well, I say about belt high, it'd be 14 inches. That's as small as they cut them, and they used to top them off probably 8 inches or something like that. But they'd have a lot of logs, you know, from 30 feet up to 60, 70 feet.
Yeah.
Anything that a pair of horses could handle to twitch on the ground there to get to the yard, well, they didn't cut it. They cut everything the whole length.
Now, they'd bring the logs if they went into the woods quite a ways from where they were stacked. They brought them out with horses you to pick up with a log hauler?
They brought them out and put on big high skidways.